medallion. It swung on its chain in the torchlight, glinting gold as a starburst. Into the silence, George said, "Want to bet?"
"You must be the fuck of a lifetime," said Orlon, just before he shoved Damon into the audience chamber where Laurent stood alone, in front of the regent and council. It was the same diorama as last time, with the regent enthroned, and the council in full dress, formidably arrayed alongside him, except that there were no courtiers thronging the chamber. It was just Laurent, alone, facing them. Damon immediately looked to see which counselor was missing his medallion. It was Herod. Another shove. Damon's knees hit the carpet, which was red, like the cloaks of the regent's guard. He was right near a part of the tapestry where a boar was speared under a tree, heavy with pomegranates. He looked up.
"My nephew has argued for you very persuasively," said the regent. And then, oddly echoing Orlant's words, "You must have hidden charm. Maybe it's your physique he finds so appealing. Or do you have other talents?"
Laurent's cold, calm voice.
"Do you imply I take the slave into my bed? What a revolting suggestion. He's a brute soldier from Castor's army."
Laurent had assumed, once again, the intolerable self-possession and was dressed for a formal audience. He was not, as Damon had last seen him, languid and somnolent-eyed, head tipped back against a wall. The handful of hours that had passed since Damon's escape was enough time for the drug to have passed from his system. Probably. Though, of course, there was no way of telling how long Laurent had been in this room, arguing with the council.
"Only a soldier. And yet you've described the bizarre circumstance in which three men broke into your chambers in order to attack him," said the regent.
He regarded Damon briefly.
"If he doesn't lie with you, what was he doing in your private space so late at night?"
The temperature, already cool, dropped sharply.
"I don't lie in the cloying sweat of men from Acalos," said Laurent.
"Laurent, if there has been an Acalon attack against you that you are concealing for some reason, we must and will know about it. The question is serious."
So was my answer. "I don't know how this interrogation found its way into my bed. May I ask where I can expect it to travel next?"
The heavy folds of a state robe swathed the throne on which the regent sat. With the curve of a finger, he stroked the line of his bearded jaw. He looked again at Damon, before returning his attention to his nephew.
"You wouldn't be the first young man to find himself at the mercy of a flush of new infatuation. Inexperience often confuses betting with love. The slave could have convinced you to lie to us for him, having taken advantage of your innocence."
"Taken advantage of my innocence," said Laurent.
"We've all seen you favor him, seated beside you at table, fed by your own hand. Indeed, you've barely been seen without him the last few days."
"Yesterday I brutalized him. Today I am swooning into his arms. I would prefer the charges against me to be consistent. Pick one."
"I don't need to pick one, nephew. You have a full range of vices, and inconsistency is the cap."
"Yes, apparently I have fucked my enemy, conspired against my future interests, and colluded in my own murder. I can't wait to see what feats I will perform next."
It was only by looking at the counselors that you could see this interview had been going on a long time. Older men dragged out of their beds, they were all showing signs of weariness.
"And yet, the slave ran," said the regent.
"Are we back to this?" said Laurent. "There was no assault against me. If I'd been attacked by four men, do you really think I would have survived, killing three? The slave ran for no more sinister reason than that he is difficult and rebellious. I believe I have mentioned his intractable nature to you, all of you, before. You chose to disbelieve me then also."
"It isn't a question of belief. This defense of the slave bothers me. It isn't like you. It speaks to an uncharacteristic attachment. if he has led you to sympathize with forces outside your own country.
Sympathize with Akalas?
The cold disgust with which Laurent said these words was more persuasive than any hot burst of outrage. One or two of the counselors shifted in place. Herod said awkwardly,
I hardly think he could be accused of that, not when his father and brother.
No one, said Laurent, has more reason to oppose Akalos than I have. If Castor's gift slave had attacked me, it would be grounds for war. I would be overjoyed. I stand here for one reason only. The truth.
You have heard it.
I will not argue further. The slave is innocent or he is guilty. Decide.
Before we decide, said the regent, you will answer this. If your opposition towards Akalos is genuine, as you maintain, if there is not some collusion, why do you continually refuse to do service on the border at Delphor? I think if you were as loyal as you claim, you would pick up your sword, gather what little there is of your honor, and do your duty.
I, said Laurent.
The regent sat back on the throne, spread his hands palm down on the dark carved wood of the curled armrests, and waited.
I don't see why that should be.
It was Odin who said,
It is a contradiction.
But one that's easily resolved, said Guillon.
Behind him there were one or two murmurs of assent. Counselor Herod slowly nodded. Laurent passed his gaze over each member of the council. Anyone appraising the situation at that moment would have seen how precarious it was. The counselors were weary of this argument and ready to accept any solution that the regent was offering, however artificial it might seem. Laurent had only two options, earn himself their censure by continuing a beleaguered wrangle, mired in accusations and failure, or agree to border duty and get what he wanted. More than that, it was late, and human nature being what it was, if Laurent did not agree to his uncle's offer, the counselors might turn on him simply for drawing this out further, and Laurent's loyalty was in question now, too.
Laurent said, You're right, uncle. Avoiding my responsibilities has led you understandably to doubt my word. I will ride to Delphor and fulfill my duty on the border. I dislike the idea that there are questions about my loyalty.
The regent spread his hands in a pleased gesture.
That answer must satisfy everyone, said the regent. He received his agreement from the council. 5 verbal affirmations, given one after the other, after which he looked at Damon and said, I believe we can acquit the slave, with no more questions about loyalty.
I humbly submit to your judgment, uncle, said Laurent, and to the judgment of the council.
Release the slave, the regent ordered.
Damon felt hands at his wrists, unbinding the rope. It was Orlan, who had been standing behind him this whole time. The motions were short jerks.
There, it is done. Come, said the regent to Laurent, extending his right hand.
On the smallest finger was his ring of office, gold capped with a red stone, ruby or garnet. Laurent came forward and knelt before him gracefully, a single kneecap to the floor.
Kiss it, said the regent.
And Laurent lowered his head in obedience to kiss his uncle's signet ring. His body language was calm and respectful. The fall of his golden hair hid his expression. His lips touched the hard red kernel of the gem without haste, then parted from it. He did not rise. The regent gazed down at him. After a moment, Damon saw the regent's hand lift again to rest in Laurent's hair and stroke it with slow, familiar affection. Laurent remained quite still, head bowed, as strands of fine gold were pushed back from his face by the regent's heavy, ringed fingers.
Laurent, why must you always defy me?
I hate it when we are at odds, yet you force me to chastise you. You seem determined to wreck everything in your path. Blessed with gifts, you squander them. Given opportunities, you waste them.
"I hate to see you grown up like this," said the regent, "when you were such a lovely boy."
Chapter 12 The rare moment of avuncular affection ended the meeting, and the regent and council left the chamber. Laurent remained, rising from where he knelt, watching his uncle and the counselors file out. Orlan, who had bowed his way out after releasing Damon from his bonds, was gone also. They were alone. Damon rose without thinking. He remembered after a second or two that he was supposed to wait for some sort of order from Laurent, but by then it was too late. He was on his feet, and the words were out of his mouth. "You lied to your uncle to protect me," he said. 6 feet of tapestried carpet lay between them. He didn't mean it the way it sounded, or maybe he did. Laurent's eyes narrowed. "Have I once again offended your high-minded principles? Perhaps you can suggest a more wholesome détente? I seem to recall telling you not to wander off."
Damon could hear distantly the shock in his own voice. "I don't understand why you would do that to help me, when telling the truth would have served you far better."
"If you don't mind, I think I've heard enough said about my character for one night. Or am I to go 12 rounds with you, too?"
"I will."
"No, I didn't mean..."
What did he mean? He knew what he was supposed to say. Gratitude from the rescued slave. It wasn't how he felt. He'd been so close. The only reason he'd been discovered at all was because of Govar, who would not be his enemy if not for Laurent. "Thank you" meant thank you for being dragged back to be shackled and tied up inside this cage of a palace. Again. Yet, unequivocally, Laurent had saved his life. Laurent and his uncle were close to being a match when it came to bloodless verbal brutality. Damon had felt exhausted just listening to it. He wondered exactly how long Laurent had stood his ground before he had been brought in.
"I can't protect you as I am now," Laurent had said.
Damon hadn't thought about what protection might entail, but he would never have imagined that Laurent would step into the ring on his behalf and stay in it.
"I meant that I am grateful..."
Laurent cut him off. "There is nothing further between us, certainly not thanks. Expect no future niceties from me. Our debt is clear." But the slight frown with which Laurent regarded Damon was not wholly one of hostility. It accompanied a long, searching look. After a moment,
"I meant it when I said I disliked feeling indebted to you."
And then,
"You had far less reason to help me than I did to help you."
"That's certainly true."
"You don't prettify what you think, do you?" said Laurent, still frowning. "A more artful man would. An artful man would have stayed put and won advantage by fostering the sense of obligation and guilt in his master."
"I didn't realize you had a sense of guilt," said Damon, bluntly. An apostrophe appeared at one corner of Laurent's lips. He moved a few steps away from Damon, touching the worked armrest of the throne with his fingertips. And then, in a sprawling, relaxed posture, he sat down on it.
"Well, take heart. I am riding to Delphor, and we will be rid of each other."
"Why does the idea of border duty bother you so much?"
"I'm a coward, remember?" Damon thought about that.
"Are you? I don't think I've ever seen you shy away from a fight. More like the opposite."
The apostrophe deepened. "True."
"Then," Laurent said,
"it doesn't concern you."
Another pause. Laurent's relaxed sprawl on the throne had a boneless quality, and Damon wondered, as Laurent continued to gaze at him, whether the drug still lingered in his veins. When Laurent spoke, the tone was conversational.
"How far did you get?"
"Not far. A brothel somewhere in the southern quarter."
"Had it really been that long since Ansel?"
The gaze had taken on a lazy quality. Damon flushed. "I wasn't there for pleasure. I did have one or two other things on my mind."
"Pity," said Laurent, in an indulgent tone. "You should have taken your pleasure while you had the chance.
I am going to lock you up so tightly you won't be able to breathe, let alone inconvenience me like this again.
Of course, said Damon, in a different voice. I told you.
You shouldn't thank me, said Laurent.
And so they took him back into his small, familiar, over-decorated room. It had been a long, sleepless night, and he had a pallet and cushions on which to rest. But there was a feeling in his chest that prevented sleeping. As he looked around the room, the feeling intensified. There were two arched windows along the wall to his left, with low, wide sills, each covered with patterned grills. They looked out on the same gardens as Laurent's loggia, which he knew from the position of his room in Laurent's apartments, not from personal observation. His chain would not stretch far enough to give him a view. He could imagine below the tumbled water and cool greenery that characterized Venetian interior courtyards. But he could not see them. What he could see, he knew. He knew every inch of this room, every curl of the ceiling, every frond curve of the window grill. He knew the opposite wall. He knew the unmovable iron link in the floor, and the drag of the chain, and its weight. He knew the 12th tile that marked the limit of his movements when the chain pulled taut. It had all been exactly the same each and every day since his arrival, with a change only in the color of the cushions on the pallet, which were whisked in and out as though from some inexhaustible supply. Around mid-morning, a servant entered, bearing the morning meal, left him with it, and hastened away. The doors closed. He was alone. The delicate platter contained cheeses, warm flaking breads, a handful of wild cherries in their own shallow silver dish, a pastry artfully shaped. Each item was considered, designed, so that the display of food, like everything else, was beautiful. He threw it across the room in an expression of total, violent, impotent rage. He regretted this almost as soon as he'd done it. When the servant re-entered later and, white-faced with nerves, began creeping around the edges of the room picking up cheese, he felt ridiculous. Then, of course, Radel had to enter and view the disorder, fixing Damon with a familiar look.
"Throw as much food as you like. Nothing will change. For the duration of the prince's stay at the border, you will not leave this room. The prince's orders? You will wash here and dress here and remain here. The excursions you have enjoyed to banquets, to hunts, and to the baths are ended. You will not be let off that chain. For the duration of the prince's stay at the border."
Damon closed his eyes briefly.
"When does he leave?"
2 days hence.
"How long will he be gone?"
"Several months."
It was incidental information to Radel, who spoke the words oblivious to their effect on Damon. Radel dropped a small pile of clothing onto the ground.
"Change."
Damon must have shown some reaction in his expression, because Radel continued.
"The prince dislikes you in Venetian clothing. He ordered the offense remedied. They are clothes for civilized men."
He changed. He picked up the clothes Radel had dropped from their little folded pile, not that there was much fabric to fold. It was back to slave garments. The Venetian clothing in which he'd escaped was removed by the servants, as though it had never been. Time, excruciatingly, passed. That one brief glimpse of freedom had made him ache for the world outside this palace. He was aware, too, of an illogical frustration. Escape, he had thought, would end in freedom, or death. But whatever the outcome, it would make some kind of difference. Except now he was back, here. How was it possible that all the fantastical events of last night had effected no change in his circumstances at all? The idea of being trapped inside this room for several months? Perhaps it was natural, trapped like a fly in this filigree web, that his mind should fixate on Laurent, with his spider's brain under the yellow hair. Last night, Damon had not given much thought to Laurent, or the plot that centered on him. His mind had been filled with thoughts of escape. He'd had neither the time nor the inclination to muse on Venetian treachery.
But now he was alone with nothing to think about except the strange, bloody attack. And so, as the sun climbed its way from morning to afternoon, he found himself remembering the three men, with their Varetian voices and Acalon knives.
"These three men attacked the slave," Laurent had said.
Laurent needed no reason to lie. But why deny he'd been attacked at all? It helped the perpetrator. He remembered Laurent's calculating cut with the knife, and the struggle after, Laurent's body hard with resistance, the breath in his chest drug-quickened. There were easier ways to kill a prince. Three men, armed with weapons from Sicyon. The Acalon gift slave brought in to be blamed. The drug, the planned rape. And Laurent, winnowing around talking, and lying, and killing. He understood. He felt, momentarily, as though the floor was sliding out from under him, the world rearranging itself. It was simple and obvious. It was something he should have seen straight away, would have seen, if he had not been blinded by the need to escape. It lay before him, dark and consummate in design and intent. There was no way out of this room, so he had to wait, and wait, and wait, until the next gorgeous platter. He gave all his thanks that the silent servant was accompanied by Riddell. He said, "I have to talk to the prince." The last time he had made a request like this, Laurent had appeared promptly, in court clothes, with brushed hair. Damon expected no less now, in these urgent circumstances, and he scrambled up from the pallet when the door was pushed open no more than an hour later. Into his room, alone, dismissing the guards, came the regent. He entered with the slow strolling walk of a lord, touring his lands. This time there were no counselors, no retinue, no ceremony. The overwhelming impression remained one of authority. The regent had an imposing physical presence, and his shoulders wore the robes well. The silver shot through his dark hair and beard spoke to his experience. He was not Laurent, lounging idly on the throne. He was to his nephew as a warhorse to a show pony. Damon made his obeisance.
"Your Highness," he said. "You're a man. Stand," said the regent.
He did so, slowly.
"You must be relieved that my nephew is leaving," said the regent.
It was not a good question to answer.
"I'm sure he'll do honor to his country," said Damon.
The regent gazed at him.
"You are quite diplomatic for a soldier."
Damon took a steadying breath. This high, the air was thin.
"Your Highness," he said, submissively. "I wait for a real answer," said the regent.
Damon made the attempt. "I'm glad he does his duty. A prince should learn how to lead men before he becomes a king." The regent considered his words.
"My nephew is a difficult case. Most men would think that leadership was a quality that ran naturally in the blood of a king's heir, not something that must be forced on him against his own flawed nature. But then Laurent was born a second son."
"So were you," came the thought, unbidden. The regent made Laurent feel like a warm-up. He was not here for an exchange of views, whatever it might look like. For a man of his status to visit a slave at all was unlikely and bizarre.
"Why don't you tell me what happened last night?" said the regent.
"Your Highness, you already have the story from your nephew."
"Perhaps, in the confusion, there was something my nephew misunderstood or left out," said the regent.
"He is not used to fighting, as you are." Damon was silent, though the urge to speak dragged at him like an undertow.
"I know your first instinct is to honesty," said the regent. "You will not be penalized for it."
"I," said Damon. There was movement in the doorway. Damon shifted his gaze, almost with a guilty start.
"Uncle," said Laurent.
"Laurent," said the regent.
"Did you have some business with my slave?"
"Not business," said the regent. "Curiosity."
Laurent came forward with the twinned deliberation and disinterest of a cat. It was impossible to tell how much he had overheard.
"He isn't my lover," said Laurent.
"I'm not curious about what you do in bed," said the regent. "I'm curious about what happened in your rooms last night."
"Hadn't we settled that?"
"Half settled. We never heard the slave's account."
"Surely," said Laurent, "you wouldn't value a slave's word over mine?"
"Wouldn't I?" said the regent. "Even your tone of surprise is feigned. Your brother could be trusted. Your word is a tarnished rag. But you can rest easy. The slave's account matches yours as far as it goes."
"Did you think there was some deeper plot here?" said Laurent. They gazed at each other. The regent said,
"I only hope your time on the border will improve and focus you. I hope you will learn what you need as the leader of other men. I don't know what else I can teach you."
"You keep offering me all these chances to improve myself," said Laurent. "Teach me how to thank you."
Damon expected the regent to reply, but he was silent, his eyes on his nephew. Laurent said,
"Will you come to see me off tomorrow, uncle?"
"Laurent, you know I will," said the regent.
"Well," said Laurent, when his uncle had left. The steady blue gaze was on him. "If you ask me to rescue a kitten from a tree, I'm going to refuse.
I don't have a petition. I just wanted to speak with you."
"Fond goodbyes."
"I know what happened last night," said Damon.
Laurent said, "Do you?"
It was the tone he used with his uncle. Damon drew a breath.
"So do you. You killed the survivor before he could be interrogated," said Damon.
Laurent moved to the window and sat, arranging himself on the sill. His pose was side-saddle. The fingers of one hand slid idly into the ornate grillwork that covered the window. The last of the day's sunlight lay on his hair and face like bright coins, shaped by the fretted openings. He gazed at Damon.
"Yes,"
Laurent said. "You killed him because you didn't want him interrogated. You knew what he was going to say. You didn't want him to say it." After a moment,
"Yes."
"I assume he was to say that Castor sent him." The scapegoat was Accolon, and the weapons were Accolon. Every detail had been carefully arranged to throw the blame southward. For verisimilitude, the assassins would also have been told they were agents of Akalos.
"Better for Castor to have friend uncle on the throne than nephew prince who hates Akalos," said Laurent.
"Except that Castor can't afford war now, not with dissent among the Kairoi. If he wanted you dead, he'd do it secretly. He'd never send assassins like this, crudely armed with Akalon weapons announcing their provenance. Castor didn't hire those men."
"No,"
agreed Laurent. "He'd known. But to hear it was another matter, and the confirmation sent a shock down into him. In the warmth of the late afternoon, he felt himself turn cold."
"Then war was the aim," he said. "A confession like that, if your uncle heard it, he would have no choice but to retaliate. If you'd been found raped by an Akalon slave, murdered by Akalon knives..."
"Someone is trying to provoke war between Akalos and Vir."
"You have to admire it," said Laurent, in a detached voice. "It's the perfect time to attack Akalos. Castor is dealing with factional problems from the Kairoi. Damianos, who turned the tide at Marlis, is dead. And the whole of Vir would rise up against a bastard, especially one who had cut down a Varetian prince. If only my murder weren't the catalyst, it's a scheme I would wholeheartedly support."
Damon stared at him, his stomach churning in distaste at the casual words. He ignored them, ignored the final honeyed tones of regret. Because Laurent was right, the timing was perfect. Pit a galvanized Vir against a fractured, feuding Akalos, and his country would fall. Worse, it was the northern provinces that were unstable, Delpha, Sicyon, the very provinces that lay closest to the Varetian border. Akalos was a powerful military force when the Kairoi were united under a single king, but if that bond dissolved,
it was no more than a collection of city-states with provincial armies, none of which could stand against a Varetian attack. In his mind's eye, he saw the future. The long train of Varetian troops moving southward, the provinces of Akalos falling one by one. He saw Varetian soldiers streaming through the palace at Eos, Varetian voices echoing in his father's hall. He looked at Laurent. Your welfare hinges on this plot. If only for your own sake, don't you want it stopped?
I have stopped it, said Laurent.
The astringent blue gaze was resting on him.
I meant, said Damon, can't you put aside whatever family quarrel you have and speak honestly to your uncle?
He felt Laurent's surprise, transmitting itself through the air. Outside, the light was just beginning to turn orange.
I don't think that would be wise, said Laurent.
Why not?
Because, said Laurent, the murderer is my uncle.
Chapter 13. But if that's true, Damon began. It was true. It was somehow not even a surprise, more like a truth that had grown for some time on the edge of his awareness, now brought into sharp relief. He thought, two thrones for the price of a few hired swords and a dose of pleasure drug. He remembered Nikkei's, appearing in the hallway with his huge blue eyes, wearing bedclothes. You can't go to Delphour, Damon said. It's a death trap. The moment he said it, he understood that Laurent had always known this. He recalled Laurent avoiding border duty again, and again, and again.
You'll forgive me if I don't take tactical advice from a slave. Scant moments after he is dragged back from a failed attempt to escape. You can't go. It isn't just a matter of staying alive. You forfeit the throne as soon as you set foot outside the city. Your uncle will hold the capital. He is already, casting his mind back over the regent's actions, Damon saw the series of moves that had led to this. Each one played out precisely and far in advance. He has already cut off your supply lines through Varenne and Marsh. You don't have finances or troops. The words were an unfolding realization. It was clear now why Laurent had worked to exonerate his slave and obfuscate the attack. If war was declared, Laurent's life expectancy would be even shorter than it was going to be in Delphour. To actually ride out to the border with a company of his uncle's men was madness. Why are you doing this? Is it a forced move? You can't think of a way around it? Damon searched Laurent's face. Is your reputation so far in the dirt that you think the council will choose your uncle for the throne anyway, unless you prove yourself?
You are right on the edge of what I will allow from you, said Laurent. Take me with you to Delphour, said Damon.
No.
Akalos is my country. Do you think I want her overrun by your uncle's troops? I will do anything in my power to prevent war. Take me with you. You will need someone you can trust. Speaking those last words, he almost winced, immediately regretting them. Laurent had asked him for trust last night, and he had thrown the words back in his face. He would receive the same treatment. Laurent just gave him a blankly curious look.
Why would I need that?
Damon stared at him, suddenly aware that if he asked, "Do you think you can juggle attempts on your life, military command, and your uncle's tricks and traps by yourself?" the answer was going to be, "Yes."
I would have thought, said Laurent, that a soldier like you would be quite happy to see Castor dethroned, after all he's done to you. Why not side with the regency against him, and against me? I'm sure my uncle has approached you to spy for him, on very generous terms.
He has, remembering the banquet. He asked me to bed you, then report back to him. Damon was forthright, not in those words.
And your answer?
That unreasonably annoyed him. If I'd bedded you, you'd know it. There was a dangerous narrow-eyed pause. Eventually,
yes, your style of grabbing your partner and kicking their legs open does stand out in the memory.
That isn't, Damon set his jaw, in no mood to get drawn into one of Laurent's infuriating exchanges. I'm an asset. I know the region.
I will do whatever it takes to stop your uncle. He looked into the impersonal blue gaze. I've helped you before. I can again. Use me however you will. Just take me with you.
Your heart to help me.
The fact that we ride towards Akalos factors in your request, not at all. Damon flushed. You will have one more person standing between you and your uncle. Isn't that what you want?
My dear brute, said Laurent, I want you to rot here.
Damon heard the metallic sound of the chain links before he realized that he had jerked against his restraints. They were Laurent's parting words, spoken with relish. Laurent had turned for the door. You can't leave me here while you ride off into your uncle's trap. There's more than your life at stake. The words were harsh with frustration.
They had no effect. He could not prevent Laurent leaving.
Damon swore. Are you that sure of yourself? Damon called after him. I think if you could beat your uncle on your own, you would have done it already. Laurent stopped in the doorway. Damon saw the cupped yellow of his head, the straight line of his back and shoulders. But Laurent didn't turn back to face him. The hesitation only lasted for a moment before he continued out the door. Damon was left to jerk once more, painfully, at the chains, alone. Laurent's apartments filled with the sounds of preparation, the hallways busy, men tramping to and fro in the delicate garden below. It was no small task to arrange an armed expedition in 2 days. Everywhere there was activity. Everywhere except here, in Damon's rooms, where the only knowledge of the mission came from the sounds outside. Laurent was leaving tomorrow. Laurent, infuriating, intolerable Laurent, was pursuing the worst possible course, and there was nothing Damon could do to stop him. The Regent's plans were impossible to guess. Damon had frankly no idea why he had waited as long as he had to move against his nephew. Was Laurent simply lucky that the Regent's ambition spanned 2 kingdoms? The Regent could have dispensed with his nephew years ago, with little fuss. It was easier to blame the death of a boy on mischance than that of a young man about to ascend to the throne. Damon could see no reason why boy Laurent should have escaped that fate. Perhaps familial loyalty had held the Regent back. Until Laurent had blossomed into poisonous maturity, sly-natured and unfit to rule. If that was the case, Damon felt a certain amount of empathy with the man. Laurent could inspire homicidal tendencies simply by breathing. It was a family of vipers. Castor, he thought, had no idea what lay across the border. Castor had embraced an alliance with Vere. He was vulnerable, ill-equipped to fight a war, the bonds within his own country showing cracks to which a foreign power had only to apply pressure. The Regent must be stopped. Akalos must be rallied, and for that, Laurent must survive. It was impossible. Stuck here, Damon was powerless to act, and whatever cunning Laurent possessed was neutralized by the arrogance that prevented him from grasping how completely his uncle had him outmatched. Once he left the capital to go traipsing across the countryside. Did Laurent really believe he could do this alone? Laurent would need every weapon at his disposal in order to navigate this course alive, yet Damon had not been able to persuade him of that. He was aware, not for the first time, of a fundamental inability to communicate with Laurent. It was not only that he was navigating a foreign language. It was as though Laurent was an entirely other species of animal. He had nothing but the stupid hope that somehow Laurent would change his mind. The sun slid slowly across the sky outside, and in Damon's locked chamber the shadows cast by the furniture moved in a dawdling semicircle. It happened in the hours before dawn the next morning. He woke to find servants in his room, and Radel, the overseer, who never slept. What is it? Is there some word from the prince? He pushed himself up, one arm braced among the cushions, hand fisting in silk. He felt himself being manhandled before he was fully upright, the hands of the servants on him, and instinct almost shrugged them off,
until he realized they were unlocking his restraints. The chain ends fell with a muffled chink into the cushions.
"Yes, change," said Riddell, and dropped a bundle unceremoniously down onto the floor beside him, much as he had done the night before.
Damon felt the thudding of his heart as he looked down at it. Varetian clothing. It was a clear message. The long, drawn-out frustration of the last day meant that he almost couldn't absorb it, couldn't trust it. He bent slowly to pick the clothes up. The pants resembled those he had found in the training arena, but were very soft and very fine, of a quality well beyond that of the threadbare pair he had hurried into that night. The shirt was made to fit. The boots looked like riding boots. He looked back at Riddell.
"Well, change," said Riddell.
He put a hand to the fastening at his waist and felt a bemused curve tug at his mouth as Riddell somewhat awkwardly averted his eyes. Riddell only interrupted once.
"No, not like that."
He shooed his hands away, gesturing for a servant to step forward and retie some idiotic piece of lacing.
"Are we?" Damon began, as the last lace was tied to Riddell's satisfaction. "The prince ordered you brought down into the courtyard, dressed to ride. You'll be fitted for the rest there."
"The rest?" Dryly. He looked down at himself. It was already more clothing than he had worn at any one time since his capture in Akalos. Riddell didn't answer, just made a sharp gesture for him to follow. After a moment, Damon did, feeling a strange awareness of the lack of restraints. "The rest?" he'd asked. He did not think much about that as they wound their way through the palace to emerge in an outer courtyard near the stables. Even if he had, he would not have come up with the answer. It was so unlikely that it simply didn't occur to him until he saw with his own eyes, and even then he almost didn't believe it. He almost laughed aloud. The servant who came forward to meet them had his arms full of leather straps and buckles, and some larger hardened leather pieces, the largest with chest moldings. It was armor. The courtyard by the stables was filled with the activity of servants and armorers, stable boys and pages, the shout of orders, the chinking sounds of saddlery. Punctuating these was the discharge of breath through equine nostrils, and the occasional strike of a hoof against paving. Damon recognized several faces. There were the men who had guarded him in stony-faced twos throughout his confinement. There was the physician who had tended his back, now out of his floor-length robes and dressed for riding. There was Jord, who had waved Herod's medallion in the alleyway and saved his life. He saw a familiar servant ducking riskily under the belly of one of the horses on some errand, and across the courtyard he caught a glimpse of a man with a black mustache, who he knew from the hunt as a horsemaster. The pre-dawn air was cool, but soon it would warm. The season was ripening from spring into summer. A good time for a campaign. In the south, of course, it would be hotter. He flexed his fingers and deliberately straightened his back. Let the feeling of freedom sink down into him, a powerful physical sensation. He was not particularly thinking of escape. He would, after all, be riding with a contingent of heavily armed men, and besides, there was now another urgent priority. For now it was enough that he was unshackled and outside in the open air, and that very soon the sun would rise, warming leather and skin, and they would mount up and ride. It was light riding armor, with enough non-essential decoration, that he took it to be parade armor. The servant told him yes, they would properly equip at Chastion. His fitting took place by the stable doors, near to a water pump. The last buckle was tightened, then startlingly, he was given a sword belt. Even more startlingly, he was given a sword to put in it. It was a good sword. Under the decoration, it was good armor, though not what he was used to. It felt foreign. He touched the starburst pattern at his shoulder.
He was dressed in Laurent's colors and bearing his insignia. That was a strange feeling. He had never thought he would ride out under a Veretian banner.
Radel, who had departed on some errand, now returned to give him a list of duties. Damon listened with part of his mind. He was to be a functional member of the company. He would report to his ranking senior, who would report to the captain of the guard, who in turn would report to the prince. He was to serve and obey, as any man. He would also have the additional duties of attendant. In that capacity, he would report directly to the prince. The duties described to him seemed to be a mixture of man-at-arms, adjutant, and bed-slave. Ensuring the prince's safety, attending to his personal comfort, sleeping in his tent, Damon's whole attention swung back to Radel. Sleeping in his tent? Where else? He passed a hand over his face. Laurent had agreed to this? The list continued. Sleeping in his tent, carrying his messages, attending to his needs. He would be paying for any relative freedom, with a period of enforced proximity to Laurent. With the other part of his mind, Damon surveyed the activity in the courtyard. It was not a large group. When you looked past the ruckus, it was the supplies for perhaps 50 men, armed to the teeth. At most, 75, more lightly armed. Those he recognized were Prince's guard. The majority of them, at least, would be loyal. Not all of them. This was Vere. Damon drew in a breath and let it out, looking at each of the faces and wondering which of them had been coaxed or coerced into the employ of the regent. How the taint of this place had sunk down into his bones. He was certain betrayal would come. He was only unsure from where. He thought logistically about what it would take to ambush and slaughter this number of men. It would not be discreet, but it would also not be difficult. At all. "This can't be everyone," said Damon. He spoke to Jord, who had come to splash his face with some water from the nearby pump. It was his first concern. Too few men.
"It isn't. We ride to Chastion and form up with the regent's men stationed there," said Jord, adding, "Don't get your hopes up. It's hardly much more than this."
"Not enough to make a dent in a real battle. Enough for the regent's men to outnumber the prince's 7-1, was Damon's guess.
"Yes," said Jord, shortly.
He looked at Jord's dripping face, the set of his shoulders. He wondered if the prince's guard knew what they were facing. Outright treachery at worst, and at best, months on the road, subject to the rule of the regent's men. The thin line of Jord's mouth suggested that they did. Damon said,
"I owe you my thanks for the other night."
Jord gave him a steady look.
"I was following orders. The prince wanted you back alive, like he wants you here. I just hope he knows what he's doing with you, and that he's not like the regent says, distracted by his first taste of cock."
After a long moment, Damon said, "Whatever else you think, I don't share his bed." It was not a new insinuation. Damon wasn't sure why it rankled so much now. Perhaps because of the uncanny speed with which the regent's speculations had spread from the audience chamber to the guard. The rewording smacked of Orlans.
"However you've turned his head, he sent us right to you."
"I won't ask how he knew where to find me."
"I didn't send them after you," said the cool, familiar voice. "I sent them after the regent's guard, who were making enough racket to raise the dead, the drunk, and those without ears."
"Your Highness," said Jord, red.
Damon turned.
"If I'd sent them after you," said Laurent, "I would have told them you went out the only way you knew, through the courtyard off the northern training arena. Did you?"
"Yes," said Damon. The pre-dawn light bleached Laurent's hair from gold to something paler and finer. The bones of his face appeared as delicate as the calamus of a feather. He was relaxed against the doorway of the stables as though he'd been there quite a while, which would explain the color of Jord's face. He must have come not indolently from the direction of the palace, but from the stables, long up, attending to some other matter. He was dressed for the day in riding leathers, the severity of which ruthlessly cancelled out any effect of the fragile light. Damon had half expected a gaudy parade costume, but Laurent had always defined himself against the opulence of the court, and he did not need guilt to be recognized under a parade standard, only the uncovered bright of his hair. Laurent paced forward. His eyes passed over Damon in turn, displaying jagged distaste. Seeing him in armor seemed to have drawn something unpleasant from the depths.
Too civilized?
Hardly, said Laurent. About to speak, Damon caught sight of Govar's familiar form. Immediately he stiffened.
What is he doing here?
Captaining the guard.
What?
Yes, it's an interesting arrangement, isn't it? Said Laurent.
You should throw him a pet to keep him off the men, said Jord.
No, said Laurent, after a moment. He said it thoughtfully.
I'll tell the servants to sleep with their legs closed, said Jord.
And Emmerich, said Laurent. Jord gave a snort. Damon, who didn't know the man in question, followed Jord's eyes to one of the soldiers on the far side of the courtyard. Brown hair, reasonably young, reasonably attractive. Emmerich.
Speaking of pets, said Laurent, in a different voice. Jord bowed his head and moved off, his part done.
Laurent had noticed the small figure on the periphery of the activity. Nicaise, wearing a simple white tunic, his face free of paint, had come out into the courtyard. His arms and legs were bare, his feet in sandals. He picked his way towards them until he faced Laurent, and then he just stood there, looking up. His hair was a careless tumble. Under his eyes were the faintest shadows, mark of a sleepless night. Laurent said, "Come to see me off?"
"No," said Nicaise.
He held out something to Laurent, the gesture peremptory and full of repugnance.
I don't want it. It makes me think of you.
Blue, limpid, twin sapphires dangled from his fingers. It was the earring he'd worn to the banquet, and which he'd lost spectacularly in a bet. Nicaise held it away from himself, as though it was made of something fetid. Laurent took it without saying anything. He tucked it carefully into a fold of his riding clothes. Then after a moment, he reached out and touched Nicaise's chin with one knuckle.
"You look better without all the paint," said Laurent.
It was true. Without the paint, Nicaise's beauty was like an arrow shaft to the heart. He had something of that in common with Laurent, but Laurent possessed the confident, developed looks of a young man entering his prime, while Nicaise's was the epicene beauty peculiar to young boys of a certain age, short-lived, unlikely to survive adolescence.
"Do you think a compliment will impress me?" said Nicaise.
"It won't. I get them all the time."
"I know you do," said Laurent.
"I remember the offer you made me. Everything you said then was a lie."
"I knew it was," said Nicaise.
"You're leaving."
"I'm coming back," said Laurent.
"Is that what you think?"
Damon felt the hair rise all over his body. He remembered again Nicaise in the hallway after the attempt on Laurent's life. He resisted with difficulty the urge to crack Nicaise open and spill all his secrets out from inside.
"I'm coming back," said Laurent.
"To keep me as a pet?" said Nicaise. "You'd love that, to make me your servant."
Dawn passed over the courtyard. Colors changed. A sparrow landed on one of the stable posts close by him, but lifted off again at the sound of one of the men dropping an armful of tack.
"I would never ask you to do anything you found distasteful," said Laurent.
"Looking at you is distasteful," said Nicaise. There was no loving goodbye between uncle and nephew, only the impersonal ritual of public ceremony. It was a spectacle. The regent was in full robes of state, and Laurent's men were turned out with perfect discipline. lined and polished, they stood arrayed in the outer courtyard while the regent at the top of wide steps received his nephew. It was a morning of warm, breathless weather. The regent pinned some sort of jeweled badge of office to Laurent's shoulder, then urged him to rise and kissed him calmly on both cheeks. When Laurent turned back to face his men, the clasp on his shoulder winked in the sunlight. Damon felt almost dizzy as the full sense memory of a long-ago fight took him.
Auguste had worn that same badge on the field.
Laurent mounted. Banners furled out around him in a series of starbursts, blue and gold. Trumpets blared, and Govar's horse kicked, despite its training. It was not only courtiers who were here to watch, but commoners, crowding near the gate. The scores of people who had turned out to see their prince made a wall of approving sound.
It didn't surprise Damon that Laurent was popular with the townspeople.
He looked the part, all bright hair and astonishing profile. A golden prince was easy to love if you did not have to watch him picking wings off flies. Straight-backed and effortless in the saddle, he had an exquisite seat when he was not killing his horse. Damon, who had been given a horse as good as his sword and a place in the formation close by Laurent, kept his place as they rode out. But as they passed beyond the inner walls, he could not resist turning in his seat and looking back at the palace that had been his prison. It was beautiful, the tall doors, the domes and towers, and the endless, intricate, interwoven patterns carved into the creamy stone. Alight with marble and polished metal, stretching themselves up to the sky were the curving roof spires that had hidden him from the sight of guards during his attempt to escape. He was not insensible to the irony of his situation, riding out to protect the man who had done all he could to grind him under his heel. Laurent was his jailer, dangerous and malicious. Laurent was as likely to rake Akalos with his claws as his uncle. None of that mattered before the urgency of stopping the machinery of the regent's plans. If it was the only way to prevent war or postpone it, then Damon would do whatever was necessary to keep Laurent safe. He had meant that. But having passed out of the walls of the Varetian palace, he knew one thing more. Whatever he had promised, he was leaving the palace behind him, and he did not intend, ever, to come back. He returned his eyes to the road and the first part of his journey, south and home. This has been an Audible Studios production of Captive Prince, written by C.S. Picott, performed by Stephen Bell Davies. Executive producers, Rena Seth and Mike Charzik. Producer, Neil Basic. Copyright, 2013 by C.S. Picott. Production copyright, 2017 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc. If you enjoyed this audiobook, be sure to get more books in the Captive Prince trilogy series today.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.